A reading from the book of Joel, chapter 2, beginning at verse 21. Be not afraid, O land. Be glad and rejoice. Surely the Lord has done great things. Be not afraid, O wild animals. For the open pastures are becoming green. The trees are bearing their fruit. The fig tree and the vine yield their riches. Be glad, O people of Zion. Rejoice in the Lord your God. For he has given you a teacher for righteousness. He sends you abundant showers, both autumn and spring rains as before. The threshing floors will be filled with grain. The vats will overflow with new wine and oil. I will repay you for the years the locusts have eaten, the great locust and the young locust, the other locusts and the locust swarm, my great army that I sent among you. You will have plenty to eat until you are full, and you will praise the name of the Lord your God, who has worked wonders for you. Never again will my people be shamed. Then you will know that I am in Israel, that I am the Lord your God, and that there is no other. Never again will my people be shamed. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our Rock and our Redeemer. Amen. In rural America, the harvest festival was highly significant for vicars, or rectors, as they are generally known over there. Indeed, it was one of the most important days of the year, for until the latter half of the last century, that's the 20th century, the food brought into church by parishioners in many places would not go to a distant mission, but rather into the household of the vicar. It depended on harvest festival what a vicar's household would eat throughout the year and what would be dished up to visitors, including any needy person that would make their way to the vicar's house. Most of the produce brought to church was fresh. To make that last for some time, the vicar, or probably even more so the vicar's wife, had to be quite good at preserving all sorts of vegetables and fruit. I doubt there would have been much parish visiting in the 2 weeks after harvest festival, and the sermon the following Sunday might have been quite short too. The work involved in preserving all this food in such a short time must have been quite phenomenal. Well, things are different in urban 21st century New Zealand. The annual diet of my family is not mainly determined by the gifts at harvest festival, and the stipend is actually sufficient to feed a family without needing to rely on preserves from the one service. But I'm still glad my mum brings me some preserves now and then. Instead of sending the occasional needy person to the vicarage up the road, in today's complex society, the Anglican Church has established a city mission, and there are other outreach facilities as well. At that mission, there's a constant stream of people receiving all kind of help. And that's also where much of the food donated today as part of the Harvest Festival is going. Our display at Harvest Festival also has changed somewhat. Instead of rows of pumpkins, at least we've got one here, carrots, corn, and celery, instead of baskets of apples, pears, and grapes, we have cans of baked beans, spaghetti, noodles, and even a bit of tea and Weet-Bix. During the 10 o'clock service, we'll do a sketch instead of a sermon, showing how through these cans of vegetables, we can see the goodness of God's provision and how through human innovation, we can enjoy the good gifts of the earth. It encourages us to consider the gifts of science and technology and the advances they have brought to human life. Well, we won't have that sketch at the 8 o'clock service, but I didn't want to prepare just a traditional harvest festival sermon for just the 8 o'clock service. So instead, what you'll hear now is a reflection, my wrestling, that was prompted by that sketch. Because you see, I'm somewhat of a traditionalist and wouldn't mind spending a week preserving vegetables and fruit, but not longer, and not if I have all sorts of other responsibilities at the same time. In the sketch, we'll think how God's goodness is reflected in a can of soup. But of course, a can of soup also perfectly reflects our modern-day system of factory farming, a system that has alienated many people from the land and has brought severe degradation to the environment. Even though a can of soup is healthier than many other processed food items, it still represents our reliance on processed food and all the health problems this brings with it. It's a fact that many people today do not know how to cook a good meal. To a certain extent, our ready-made meals reflect our superficial society today. I've heard of people who had problems last year of surviving the lockdown because they've never really cooked in their lives and have relied on takeaways for their food. For them, a can of soup that you could buy in the supermarket was indeed a lifesaver. But it is a sad reflection of our distance from food and the provision of food that people do not know how to cook. As some of you know, my parents were here over Easter. On Saturday night, we sat together in the kitchen. My parents were taking the fleshy parts of walnuts. I was sitting alongside them shelling maroni, edible chestnuts. They thought I'd better stick to that and not get my hands dirty with the walnuts because the next day I would have to preside at Eucharist and that wouldn't have looked good. We talked that evening about many things. Actually, I can remember many evenings and even afternoons when we were cracking nuts at home, shelling peas and beans, destoning cherries, quartering apples, stripping carrots, and many more fruits and vegetables ready for preserving or freezing. But even though it was tedious work, we sat together, talking, interacting. We were not bending over our cell phones. Sometimes, I have to admit, we did watch something on TV while we did the work. When I visited some of my friends in rural America and my in-laws in the Caribbean, I also experienced how important it was to sit on the front porch in rocking chairs preparing food for the days or months ahead. Having read a few accounts of life in centuries past of farming and rural life, even of rural clergy, doctors, and administrators, I realized how much time was spent sitting together working on preserving food. Some of these accounts made clear that here, during work, the conversation flowed, normally with silence and breaks in between, but here people communicated in a way that we have lost these days. And yet, if well used, that time away from monotonous duties can also add to our work experience and our experience of life. It can allow us to work for others, to learn, to enjoy the beauty of gardens. Still, I suspect that the majority of the time that we've got free now is used rather unwisely on surfing the internet, watching soap operas, and browsing magazines. I realize that our interconnected commercial farming system has also significantly increased food security. A few years ago, I drove with my father's cousin through the area they grew up in. He told me of farms with poor soils, where people in many years did have such a small harvest that they were severely malnourished. He told me of food shortages even he experienced in his childhood. That's not that long ago, he's just 70 years old. Our trading and farming system, together with our more international population, has also allowed us to experience tastes that, at least in my opinion, have made life more pleasant. I am certainly happy that I don't have to live on traditional New Zealand fare, like mutton and things like that. It's great to have our local veggie and grocery shop nearby run by ethnic Indians, which also has some nice exotic ingredients. But I wonder what the system of commercial farming and of trading to satisfy our tastes has to do with such biblical verses as we heard today. The tree bears its fruit, the fig tree and vine give their full yield. O children of Zion, be glad and rejoice in the Lord your God, for he has given the early rain for your vindication. He has poured down for you abundant rain, the early and the latter rain, as before. The threshing floor shall be full of grain, the vats shall overflow with wine and oil. Was another verse, just one of the dozens of verses. I will give you rains in their season, and the land shall yield its produce, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Your threshing shall overtake the vintage, and the vintage shall overtake the sowing. You shall eat your bread to the full and live securely in your land. In the Old Testament, certainly, there was a connection between God, the gifts of the land, the families who worked the land, and the wider community. Today, we think of the provision of food mainly as an economic activity, often divorced from our relationship to God, family, and community. While in the time of ancient Israel, the provision of food was a major part of work and life, today food supply is only a minor part of economic activity, certainly in comparison with housing, technology, travel, fashion, entertainment, and whatever else we spend our time and money on. In biblical times and for much of Christian history, seed time and harvest, food preparation and storage were part of the life lived under God's blessing. People mostly did not think of their activities in terms of economics, but rather in terms of heritage, harvest, and health. They were aware of both the rhythms and uncertainties of life. That's why they realized that the outcome of the work depended only partly on their own initiative and work, and partly on the blessing of God. Everything depends on God's blessing is a saying that is found on many buildings in some parts of Europe. The New Testament, I would say, does not have the same focus on the blessing of God and the harvest, but I think that the concept is there. For Jesus tells the people that God knows what they need each day. After all, we also pray for our daily bread. So how do we apply these ancient words to our modern life? Well, I hope we can join in the song of praise found in the prayer book, for example. We offer thanks and praise to God for this good land, for its trees and pastures, for its plentiful crops, and the skills we have learned to grow them. Our thanks for Moriah and the cities we have built, for science and discoveries, for our life together. All that, of course, also includes our food and farming systems, our economic and distribution systems. And there's something to be thankful here. I don't think we need to rebel against all commercial farming and international trade. But it may be good to reconsider whether we should reduce so much of life to economics. So therefore, I'm grateful for every permaculture small farmer, every vegetable gardener, every slow food cook, who make us think about food and do not just reduce it all to pure economics. And through that, maybe we can see that what we receive in life is our gifts of God. We could consider the connection between God, the land, ourselves, and the community. And above all, we need to continue to be thankful.